Do you like driving? Is that why you have a car, because you actually like driving? Or is it just a conveyance for you? Could become an important question, because we could be heading towards a world where there are no drivers, no motorists, cars, no drivers, maybe no accidents. Although there are certain random things I suppose it would be very hard to avoid. Will this future come to pass? And if it does, what will Britain's role in it be? And I specify Britain because UK has just announced it wants to be the centre of that world. It's spending the equivalent of $18 million Australian dollars to become the international centre for the development of driverless cars. There's a town near London that's already preparing for a pilot program for driverless vehicles. I'm joined now by Dr. Katie Mason from Lancaster University Management School, who's been looking at the potential of self-driving cars in the UK. Katie, thank you very much for joining us. Is this viable?
Well, that remains to be seen, but we're trying to put things in place so that it will be. I think the interesting thing is to think how such a new technology would fit into our everyday practices. If you think about something like the mobile phone or the iPad, how they have completely changed the way we work, when we work, and how we work, it's easy to see how these technologies, when that we introduce them, have surprising effects.
Yeah, well, I suppose there is an unpredictability about it. How would this work, though, if it were to be developed? How exactly does it work technically?
Okay, so there's some technologies that we're familiar with that are obviously necessary, which are already in cars, such as the ABS braking system, where a computer management system on the car makes the brakes pad on and off and stops the car from skidding. But when you put that with a more sophisticated energy management system and in a driverless car, you have the ability to brake on individual wheels, so the car has more stability. So this becomes a really important part of a sort of pre-safety system. So by placing sensors around the car, then the car has a very, very short response time to reacting to a surprising object in a certain place.
Right, okay. Sorry to cut in there, but the thing that scares me about that is, it like those cars that are self-parking that you see nowadays, is I always wonder what happens if a sensor goes wrong, and it would only take one sensor to fail, wouldn't it, for there to be a catastrophe?
Well, there is sensors all over the car, so should one sensor fail, there shouldn't be a problem. But I think when you have a sophisticated system like for example, the Google Chauffeur system, it's what they call a semi-autonomous car, so it actually does need some driver input. So there's some things the car can do and some things that it can't. So, for example, the car understands the world as a series of moving objects and still objects. So through the mapping system, it has a good understanding of what the still objects are in the world. And against that, it has sensors all around the car, which gives it a feeling of moving objects in the world. And through the radar technology and the sonar technology, it creates a 3D model inside the car's computer of what's happening in the world. And so it's a combination of those two things. But there are situations that the car can handle because it's programmed to, such as parallel parking, but you still need to put the car in the right place and tell it where you want to park.
I see.
And then uses the sensor to do the manoeuvre.
Okay.
But something that's very sophisticated, like pulling onto a motorway, the car is still not able to do that on its own.
Okay, so that's presumably where the research goes. And imagine if you've got a car that has to map its environment like this constantly, speed becomes a factor. How fast could a car go, realistically, and do all this?
Well, that's interesting. It varies quite a lot. I mean, the lasers, it rotates at something like 64. It has 64 lasers rotating all the time, and it gives a million measurements a second to build the 3D model. So that gives you some idea of the amount of data that it's processing and the speed at which it's processing it, if you like, for the car's brain. But there's a whole sort of variety of technologies the pods we're seeing that are being introduced in Milton Keynes, which are more along the idea of a kind of light railway without the sort of underground infrastructure technologies on the floor to keep them going on a track. And those only go at 12 miles an hour.
Right.
But they have been tested. For example, there have been some work done with cars following in convoys. So the sensors keep the cars at a certain speed and at a certain distance from each other. And those have been traveling successfully at, I think it's 57 miles an hour.
Okay, so yeah, that's fairly quick. I mean, it's close to 100 k's an hour. What would traffic look like if we could actually crack this? Would it, I mean, lane changing and all these sorts of things, they're very complicated processes and kind of negotiated processes that we go through when we're driving.
Yeah, that's right. I think that is a really interesting question. And one of the reasons why we need experiments. So a lot of the experiments so far have been on understanding the technologies, making sure that technologies are reliable. And now there's this need to understand how they fit with social practice, how we normally drive, how we normally run our lives. And a lot of those are unpredictable. So small-scale experiments is, I guess, what we're entering into at the moment. For example, you can imagine, right, if you've got a driverless car and you want to nip into the laundrette in town to drop off some dry cleaning, instead of parking your car, paying a car parking fee, and then returning to your car, it might be tempting to stop quickly outside the shop, let your car go around the block and pick you up on the way back, in which case our roads might become more congested because there's empty cars running everywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So we need to think about the legislation that's going to go along with that and support that, and who has responsibility for cars, and to what extent cars become autonomous or semi-autonomous.
Yeah, and there have been some very interesting philosophical questions raised about moral judgments in driving. You know, if you have to make a choice between crashing into two different things and circumstances, how would a driverless car make that choice? It's very interesting, the range of issues it precipitates. Before I let you go, though, I just want to get your thoughts on something, because I got a text from Matt in Richmond who asserts this. I don't know if this is true or not, but you'd be in a good position to say. It says, Google has already developed driverless cars. They have done millions of Ks on Californian roads. They're already well down the path to commercialising this technology. Is that true? And if so, is that a problem for the UK getting on board now?
It is true. Google have been in the driverless car race right from the beginning. They've also been very public about what they're doing compared with other manufacturers. But nearly all of the big manufacturers now are entering in some way, shape or form into the ideas of driverless cars. I think they have a plan to have an affordable car kit. For example, the Google car, it's about sensors and software and detection kit that fits onto an existing car system.
Right.
And they're hoping to make that affordable. I think they have a target of 2018, which isn't that far away, really. But yeah, they have something like 800,000 accident-free miles logged. But at the same time, they've been working with legislators where they've been testing these cars to change legislation around driving regulations, road regulations, etc. So that's a whole baggage of things that's going on together there. And the same thing's happening in the UK.
Wow.
Interesting thing what's happening in the UK is that there's lots of different core expertise around software, around information management systems, around cybernetics. And so there's lots of national and international collaborations, but it's not only understanding the individual parts, it's how these systems work together as a whole. And I think what the UK is really trying to specialise in is understanding how the low carbon, how the cloud-enabled mobility, how transport on demand all works together to make cities more effective and more efficient.
It's a very, very complicated set of considerations, Katie. It's a very interesting future. You've got to get a move on then if Google are up to it. Thank you very much for your time. Good to speak to you. Katie Mason, who's at Lancaster University Management School. She's been looking at the potential of self-driving cars in the UK. She was speaking to us there via Skype.